Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Virginia 69, Duke 68. That was improbable. I am Chris Graham, joined by Scott German. We're recording in the afterglow of Virginia's win down in Cameron. And we have to both admit that, neither of us thought Virginia would win. And I was adamant that Virginia would not only not win when Scott and I were trading texts last night, but Virginia would get blown out. Virginia, though, stepped up. And we'll break down all the ways that the Hoos stepped up. But first, Scott, has your heart rate gotten back into the realm of where it needs to be after? I mean, we're starting to record 2 hours after the game. But man, that was a classic college basketball game.
Absolutely not. My heart rate it'll be back to normal sometime around Wednesday. As my normal, which is probably for anyone else would have them in the intensive care unit, So, but the other thing about our text back and forth yesterday is I was the one that was a little bit more optimistic that we would at least, I didn't think we would win, but something told me we were going to go down there and not just be kicked around. I just felt like, the game against Miami really gave me a lot of confidence that, and I also took into consideration Duke may have had a little bit of a letdown. I don't know if that really had anything to do with tonight's game or not, but in fact, that I think we're just a better coach team, to be honest with you.
Okay, but you say that, but I've got to call you out on one thing. One of the two of us placed money on this game.
Yeah, I did.
And where did you place that money?
I'm becoming a little bit of a gamble. What do they call them? Gambleholics?
You're definitely, you're not quite an addict yet, but you're.
No, I'm not. And I just do it for amusement.
But you didn't bet on Virginia to cover.
No, I thought they could, but I went against them. I took Duke and that would cover the points. And so that way, if I lost, I won.
So the score I had projected was 71-47. I will say a couple of things. Trevor Keels did not start for Duke again tonight. Now he did play 27 minutes off the bench, but if Keels starts and plays 35 minutes, I don't know that Virginia has got as much of a chance to win the game as certainly they ended up having. I even texted you to that effect when I saw the starting lineups about 10 minutes before the game. I said, wow, he's not starting. They're starting Jeremy Roach again. And from a matchup standpoint, Duke's guards are big. Keels is the shortest of their three guards. He's 6'4", 221. He's a running back back there. Kia Clark at 5'9". I know we're trying to list him at 5'10 now. He's not 5'10". He's not really even 5'9", but we'll go with 5'9". No. Gives up a lot. He gives up 50 pounds. He gives up 7 inches to a 6'4 guy. And then you've got Wendell Moore at 6'5", and you've got A.J. Griffin at 6'6". I mean, Virginia, I love Reese Beekman and Armaan Franklin against most teams 2 and 3s, but, they play all 2 and 3s. And so when Jeremy Roach at 6'1 got the start, that signaled to me, hey, there's a glimmer of hope here. And then Virginia, let's give Virginia credit. This is a team that has started slow many nights this year. They did not start slow. 8-2, forced a Duke timeout early, and led most of this game. So this was an incredible performance from Virginia in that sense.
Yeah, Chris, and that early timeout, Duke Krzyzewski, Coach Krzyzewski, I had a relative that was at the game, attended Duke, has a daughter that's now a lacrosse player at Duke, and she was texting me during the game. She's one of these, she's just a real sports nut like we are. And when Duke called the early timeout, she said, this isn't a good sign because Krzyzewski hates calling timeouts. And he was forced to call that timeout. I think it was 8-2, maybe.
Yeah, 8-2 early, yeah, before.
And just think about this for a second. That's not exactly what I would call panic time. So Krzyzewski saw something there that he wasn't taking a lot of light to, because 8-2, I mean, unless you're Pete Gillen, you're not calling a timeout at 8-2.
Yeah.
I mean, 8-2 is not, that's what, how, I don't know what mark it was. I had my stats up here, but it couldn't have been more than a couple minutes into the game.
It was right around where the media timeout would have been. Maybe
no, about 4 minutes. Before. So he called a timeout knowing that there was a media timeout impending in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Let's see. It was the 30-second timeout was at 16:40 mark of the first half. So, yeah, 8-2 is not time to start waving a flag or anything else. But yeah,
unless he saw you something. See something you didn't like.
Well, and he said after the game, I've not seen the full quotes from him and didn't watch the press conference with him. But he one of the quotes I saw from him after the game was he felt like his team didn't play with the energy in the first half that they did then in the second half. Now, so Virginia was up 5 at halftime. He felt his team played with good energy in the second half. And, you know, honestly, I mean, Virginia held the lead most of the second half. So, but yeah, he saw something early, and credit to Virginia. Virginia came, I mean, we played on Saturday as well. You know, Duke won against North Carolina. Virginia beat a really good Miami team and beat the heck out of them Saturday night. So both these teams were playing on short rest. That's, I mean, you know, the coming off the emotional high of beating North Carolina is no excuse for Duke. Both these teams had big wins on Saturday. But Virginia led by as many as 12. Duke hit 3 threes in the last, like, minute and a half or so, cut the lead to 5 at the half. And we were texting each other at halftime, Scott, and my words were the first 5 minutes of the second half are important. The ESPN broadcast crew agreed and pointed out that 5 minutes into the second half, Virginia actually had outscored Duke by 1 point in those first 5 minutes. Virginia, you know, that's normally a time when you see Duke sort of have an onslaught. And they had hit those 3 threes at the end of the first half, got back to within 5. The crowd was ready to erupt, and Virginia withstood. And when Virginia withstood those first 5 minutes, that said to me, this one might come down to the end.
Yeah. You know, so we can talk till tomorrow morning, till the sun rises, about critical plays in this game. But let's talk about that, what we were talking right before we went on the air, and we kind of stopped ourselves so we wouldn't steal our thunder. For those of us that go back to the dark ages of Virginia basketball, Dave Lado coached teams, not to mention any specific names, but you remember how painstaking it was to watch us even inbounds the ball?
Yeah, there were times. Yeah. You're skipping to the end right now, but yeah, there were, and Virginia had a timeout, fortunately. So let's not skip to the end yet. Let's save that. Let's write that down, because that's the end sequence, because that's an important point. But you talk about important plays. There were so many in this game. Now, that one at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's not skip to the end. You know, Virginia – so Reese Beekman gets his fourth foul 42 seconds into the second half. Excuse me. Was it his third foul 42 seconds into the second half, and then his fourth foul at the 7:28 mark. Now I'm going to praise somebody who did not shoot the ball. Malachi Poindexter played 14 minutes off the bench. You might not have noticed that, folks, if you're listening, tuning in here. He didn't do anything. He didn't score. I think he had a rebound. Let me see here. In fact, he had 2 rebounds. But this kid played at St. Anne's Belfield 2 years ago. He's a walk-on. He had to get into school. He didn't get a scholarship. He didn't have a scholarship. And he had to guard NBA. Guys are going to be playing in the NBA next year. You know, all those Duke kids that are playing guard are NBA players. This kid's a walk-on at St. Anne's Belfield. And he played 14 minutes. His plus-minus was just -4. You know, Reese Beekman having to go to the bench with 42 seconds into the second half, my first reaction was, uh-oh, here's where it goes away from us. And he didn't get back into the game until the 12-minute mark. Virginia – when he came back in, Virginia was still ahead. Credit to Poindexter, credit a little bit to Cody Statman, but Poindexter got the bulk of the minutes of the guards off the bench.
A walk-on
who hadn't played. He played a couple garbage minutes the other night, and that was his first minutes in weeks. And that kid played 14 minutes in a win at Duke. there were a lot of MVPs tonight. That's an MVP type performance, even without scoring a point or shooting a shot.
Yeah, and it, you know, that just goes to tell you how well coached. I think that tells you how well coached this team is, because, you know, he had that comes from just knowing that you have to be ready, whether you're a rotation guy or not, because you never know what's going to happen. And for him to come in and give Tony the minutes that he did, that says a lot for him, but I think it also says a lot for the coaching staff to be able to keep those players focused and keep their intensity level up. It's kind of, you know, like a pinch hitter in baseball that never knows when he's going to get in the game, but can come in the bottom of the ninth and get a base hit. You know, that's just, to me, focus, concentration, and just probably a lot of just really good coaching to keep these players engaged like they are.
Now let's talk about the bigs. I like talking about these guys. Caden Shedrick and Francisco Cofaro. Shedrick, 16 points, 8 of 8 shooting. He had 6 rebounds. He came off the bench again tonight. He's been the bench guy for a while, 24 minutes. Cofaro, 8 points, 3 of 6 shooting, made both of his free throws, 6 rebounds in 16 minutes. Coach K did see this. I didn't see a lot of what he had to say after the game, but he also talked about how Virginia dominated inside. 52-28 advantage for Virginia in points in the paint.
Chris, that's the second coach in a row that has said how we dominated inside.
Who would have thought this team, I mean, even this season, these guys were getting outplayed by the likes of JMU and Navy, and they're dominating Duke's guys. Again, this Mark Williams guy for Duke, who had 16 points and 4 rebounds tonight, he's a projected lottery pick. He got outplayed by these two guys. That's Virginia again. And this isn't, I mean, you know, no disrespect to the Boston Colleges and Pitts of the world. They dominated Miami, who, when they came to Charlottesville, were in second place by half a game. And then they dominated Duke, who still leads the ACC even after losing tonight. They dominated the best teams in the ACC. These guys who a few weeks ago were chopped liver.
Have we decided what we're going to call the two-headed monster that Tony uses as center?
Yeah,
we need to. So tonight they scored 20. What, tonight they had 24 points?
24 points and 11 of 14 shooting and 12 rebounds.
Have we decided if it's Kadri? Is it Kaferi? What are we going to call these two kids that
Shedfaro? We'll have to think about that.
We got to think about that. But it's obvious what Tony's doing. I mean, he's using two players to collectively. If you go back to Moneyball, he's taking a Billy Beane mentality.
Yeah.
He's
platooning these guys.
He's platooning these players.
Hey, I'll go back to your Baltimore Orioles.
He's platooning these guys in the same game.
Go back to your Baltimore Orioles in the 70s. This is Ron Renicki and John Lowenstein playing left field. When you need your left-handed guy, when you need your right-handed guy, you're putting those guys in there, and they play a combined 40 minutes. Now, some games they'll play together very little. They'll play together on the floor. But
occasionally they do.
Occasionally, but not tonight. Tonight they played an exact – now here's the matchup that when I broke the game down yesterday, because we didn't have a lot of time. We played Saturday, have a game on Monday. The Jaden Gardner versus Paolo Banchero matchup was the one that I thought, man, they are going to eat us alive here. And no offense to Jaden Gardner, but he has not played well. He's a 6'6 power forward. He's not played well against teams that are bigger. And Banchero is 6'10, 6'11. And he's a projected lottery. He is of their four projected first round picks, three of them lottery picks, he's the top guy. So I thought, man, they are going to eat us alive there. And again, no offense to Gardner, but he's going to have his hands full. Here's the stat lines tonight. Gardner, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 35 minutes. Banchero, 9 points, 9 rebounds. Now, and I'm going to, within a game here, 9 points on 3 of 9 shooting. Banchero had one shot attempt from the field in the second half. It was that wild three at the end when in the final 1.1 seconds that hit the top of the backboard. So he was 0 for 1 in the entire – he played the entire 20 minutes. No foul trouble, nothing. He was 0 for 1 in 20 minutes. It was in the last second on a shot that hit the top of the backboard. He had two rebounds and three turnovers in the final 20 minutes. The Banchero, who's going to make a lot of money starting, you know, sometime in a few months, 9 points, his first game as a collegian, not in double digits, 9 rebounds in 38 minutes. Thoroughly outplayed by Jaden Gardner.
Oh, I agree. And this is the first time I've watched him play to any degree this season. And the one thing that comes to mind, having seen him now for a whole game, man, he's as soft as tissue paper.
He didn't, you know, Scott, I forgot he was on the floor in the
second half. He was invisible at times.
He was the invisible man. Yes, he was.
I'm not an NBA scout, but I wonder if that might have caught the attention of some tonight. Because if he goes soft against UVA,
yeah,
what's he going to do in the NBA?
Because, again, Noah, Jaden Gardner is probably not an NBA player. He's a G League player who might play his way in the NBA in a couple of years when he gets to that level. He's a really good college player, but he's not a top first round pick.
Chris, we watch the NBA every night with the league pass, right?
Yeah.
And even some of the weaker teams that we've seen play this year would eat him up.
Banchero, you mean? Yeah, no doubt. He's a guy that he has all the stuff on paper. He'll, I'm sure, do great in pre-draft workouts. Tonight, he was absent.
So is this a result of one and done? I mean, he's going. We're talking about him playing in the NBA next year. What if this was we used the Wayback Machine and he's a 3 or 4 year starter?
Well, that's a good question. I don't, you know, I guess.
Is this a byproduct of being a one and done?
I don't know if it's a byproduct. He just didn't play well tonight, and he got shut down. He had one shot attempt, and it was a wild three at the end of the game. He didn't even shoot the ball meaningfully in the second half. This guy's supposedly the king of their offense. He was 3 of 9 from the field overall. So even when he did shoot the ball, he wasn't that good. He contributed 2 rebounds and 3 turnovers in the second half. This guy who's going to be – so I don't want to – I'm not downing him as much as I'm praising Jaden Gardner, because Jaden Gardner had 17 points, 8 rebounds. Let's give some praise here instead of, you know, downing Banchero. He had a bad night, but he didn't even do anything. Virginia didn't let him do anything. And you know what's odd about this, Scott? I'd have to go back and watch more closely. You know, Virginia often will like post to post double, but he doesn't play much in the post. It wasn't post to post doubling. He just didn't do anything. He got the ball on the perimeter and gave it up. If he got the ball in the perimeter. So Gardner shut him down. And then on the other end, Gardner, you know, put up 17 points. Now he's 8 of 19 from the field. But he played a key role in the zone offense when Duke went zone, because Duke wasn't stopping Virginia from getting to the rim. They had to go zone. He hit some little foul line length jumpers to make Coach K go out of the zone. And he had some stick backs. I mean, solid game for Gardner on both ends of the floor. He won the matchup, and that was the matchup of the night.
That was the matchups that we were talking about last night or yesterday evening, that Virginia didn't match up in any position against Duke.
To me, we'll talk about the point guard next. It was point guard and then in the four spot. And the four spot I thought was a big advantage Duke. I thought Virginia might – the centers, Virginia might have a slight advantage, and Virginia had a big advantage, it turned out. And I thought that Beekman and Franklin would hold their own against the other two Duke guards, Wendell Moore and A.J. Griffin. I thought K.A. Clark would have a big disadvantage. He didn't put up the point numbers. He didn't make the three at the end, but he had 8 points and 9 assists, including the assist on the three at the end, K.A. Clark. And 9 assists in the game. Now, it seemed like to me, you know, we've seen Reese Beekman control some games this year. Tonight's game was controlled by Kihei Clark. You know, think about that. It was 45-42. It felt like Duke, one of those times it felt like Duke was getting ready to take the game over. And then Virginia had gone like two or three possessions empty, a couple turnovers, a missed shot. And then Kihei finds Caden Shedrick from half court on an alley-oop dunk. You know, it was stuff like that. He pulled stuff out. There was a fast break layup in the first half, just stuff that was uncharacteristic for Virginia to do, but a couple of fast break baskets there. We won by 1 point. You know, this is a team that doesn't normally run the floor. I'm looking at the stats here, Scott, and Duke is the team that plays pace. Duke came into the game averaging 71 possessions per game. Virginia had 10 fast break points. Duke had one. K.A. Clark's the reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Getting back to, I was reading and I think you said this, but concerning Banchero, is that how you pronounce it?
I think I heard the announcers calling him Banchero tonight, so I'll go with that.
Banchero, okay, whatever. he had one shot in the second half, and was that the shot that hit the side of the backboard?
The top and side of the backboard was the shot of the second half.
I mean, and that's your draft pick that just went invisible.
That was his one shot of the second half.
I mean, we got more out of Cody Statman.
We got one out of one from Cody Statman.
Exactly. And Cody Statman's not going to go in the NBA draft.
We got as much from Poindexter in the second half.
Exactly. A walk-on.
A walk-on who didn't shoot the ball. We got as much from him.
I like the comment I read on from someone that said Banchero. How are we pronouncing it again?
Banchero.
Banchero. Yeah. He shrunk up in the second half like George Costanza's junk after a dip in the pool.
Yeah. When that shrinkage, that was definitely some shrinkage there.
So when can we start talking about the inbounds play?
Well, there was a play before the inbounds play.
Okay. The play before.
They're Virginia down two. So Virginia led most of the game. I mean, from the midway point of the first half until about the 4 minute mark of the second half, Virginia had the lead consistently in this game. Duke took a 66-63 lead with a 7-0 run. Armand Franklin made a free throw. Virginia forced a shot clock violation, got the ball back. Kea Clark got a nice backdoor pass from Reese Beekman, got a shot. He missed the layup at the rim. Ball out of bounds to Virginia. Set up another play. This time Virginia called timeout. Tony Bennett called timeout. Set up a really nice play for Reese Beekman. He missed the layup because it got blocked. I think Theo John blocked the shot. And so Duke all of a sudden, hey, here we go. Got the ball, 2-point lead. First time they've had the ball with the lead. Jeremy Roach is, I don't know what he was doing. Jeremy Roach was in La La Land. He was thinking, oh, yeah, let's just set up a play here. Reese Beekman's still behind him. Reese Beekman leads the ACC in steals. He steals the ball, makes the basket, gets fouled, doesn't make the free throw, but it's tied. Boy, what a play from Beekman. At that point in the game, Reese Beekman had 2 points and three assists in the game because of all the foul trouble. He only played 25 minutes total in the game. Then Duke goes and makes two free throws. We'll talk about this in a minute, but Duke 18 of 22 from the foul line. Virginia 5 of 9. Virginia attacked the rim. Virginia had 10 more shots at the rim than Duke did. Duke got 13 more free throws. I'm calling bullshit on the ACC refs. that's crap. But anyway, we'll talk about more about that later. So Virginia gets the ball back. Virginia missed a shot, got the rebound back, then missed another shot. I think Gardner missed a shot. Kea Clark ties it up. That's a forgotten part of this game. Kea Clark with the held ball on the rebound after the Gardner miss, and a possession goes to Virginia. I think Kea also had the held ball because Virginia got the ball to start the second half. There was a held ball on a Duke layup attempt. Kihei did that. That's when you don't think about that. That was like 4 or 5 minutes ago in the game. So two held balls by Kihei. Virginia gets the ball back. And now, Scott, now I want to set you up. I've teed it up for you. This inbounds play that wins the game.
Well, so now we can go back in time to the Dave Lado days when – just inbounding the ball was a chore for Virginia.
Well, and even, I mean, I'll interject here for a second. Remember, now, these were Dave Lado players, but remember, was it the first year of Tony that we had a 10-point lead with like 40 seconds ago in the ACC tournament against Miami.
Yes.
Couldn't Tony's get the ball in bounds.
Yeah. Tony's
and,
first
and lost the game in regulation. Okay.
Yep. So if I don't know, I'm sure most people did, but so that we were forced to call a timeout. Well, we went from after the timeout, we go from Kie throwing it in to Beekman inbounding, correct?
Yeah, because they had their 7-1 guy. They had Williams on Kie, so 7-1 on 5-9-ish.
Somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah.
So we switch, and Tony alluded to it in the press conference that associate head coach Jason Williford is the coach for inbounding.
Jason Boom Boom Williford, we just started calling him. Hey, he wanted to fight in the first half.
he is the inbounds coach, and he basically or he did draw up that play. In fact, Tony said if it worked, he's going to take credit for it. If it didn't work, it was Jason's fault. So, I mean, this is just how finite Tony has his team down is that each coach, he gives coaches responsibilities, huge responsibilities.
Yeah, to be the – that's like in football. You know, you got your offensive coordinator, then you've got your quarterback's coach. Some teams have a running game coordinator and a passing game coordinator. Tony's got an inbounds coordinator.
I don't know what it would compare to an analogy in football. Would it be a third down and seven coach?
Yeah, it's just pretty much. Yeah, because your offensive coordinator calls the plays, but this is your,
this is when you got to have a first down or something.
Literally in this case, you lose the game. Now, I thought it was interesting. Tony said, and it makes sense because Duke was switching from man to zone a lot in this game. They called one play if there was a zone defense and then one play for man. Now, the hard part for that is, and the reason you have a point guard throwing the ball in bounds, because you have to read out of an inbounds defense. A lot of teams will play zone out of inbounds defense and then go switch back to man-to-man. So it takes experience to kind of recognize what play to run. You've only got 7 seconds. So Beekman gets the ball inbounds to Clark. Things break down for Duke defensively from there. I watched this play a couple times to kind of break it down. Clark gets the ball. Banchero switches onto him. So that's advantage Clark. I mean, anytime you've got a 6'11 guy guarding a guard on the perimeter, that's advantage to the team with the guard with the ball in his hands. So then you have Beekman, the inbounder, and you always hear this. Fans, if you're listening, if you watch a lot of basketball, you hear the commentators say this. The most dangerous guy on an inbounds play late in the game is the inbounder because you don't account for him. Everybody's trying to worry about where the ball is, and so it's easy to get lost on the guy who inbounds the ball. Well, Beekman inbounded the ball. Caden Shedrick, I mean, this is how things work. Shedrick had 16 points, 8 of 8 shooting. The most important thing he did in this game was set this pick. He set a pick on Trevor Keels, who was guarding Beekman out of the play. He had him sealed off so bad that Shedrick was posting Keels up in the lane. Beekman catches the ball at the 3-point line. I mean, that's a good 10, 12 feet away. Beekman is absolutely wide open. Scott, when you were watching this live, what were you thinking? I'll tell you what I was thinking. I was watching the game with my wife, Crystal, and she says, "What do you think they do here?" And I said, "They're going to drop a play for a three. You want to win this game in regulation. You don't want to play 5 more minutes against these guys."
What was I thinking at that time?
Mm-hmm. In terms of what they would do, would they go for a
how
two?
How I was going to afford to buy a new TV. And how my TV survived after the basketball.
How about the dogs? Are the dogs able to be around you at this stage?
They'll come back eventually.
Okay, come back eventually.
When they get hungry. they're here. They're safe. Chris, I felt like that they were going to get the shot off, a good shot. I felt confident. I watched
the – Were you thinking two or three?
Thinking three.
You were thinking three as well.
Okay. All the way. And I felt Tony was thinking three because because if we'd lost, if we'd gone into overtime, first of all, I think if we would have gotten the ball down inside, there, Duke could have taken a machete and cut someone's arm off, and they weren't going to call a foul on it.
Well, based on the way the game had been called.
Based on the way the game had been called. So I felt like our best shot was a good inbounds play and a screen or a roll, pick and roll or something. And I felt like Tony would play for the win. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to win it, or I did not want to go to overtime.
Because you've got Beekman with four fouls. You've got Kafaro with four fouls. Even though they've got Williams with four fouls, they've got more guys than we've got. What do you think it says? I mean, this is an easy question, I guess. Reese Beekman is the guy they draw the play up for. He's a guy that, I mean, as of December something, we were talking about, why didn't he work on his jump shot in the offseason? Because we all know that once he gets a jump shot, he's a great player. He was, Scott, I ran the numbers on this. He was 5 for his first 34 on jump shots this year, 2 and 3-point jump shots. They ran this play for him because he's shooting that well lately. What confidence they've got in this guy. And then he rewards them with the big make with 1.1 seconds to go.
Again, it just shows you what the genius of the what Tony can do. I mean, he stuck with him, and he's a different player. Here's a question I want to ask. Is it too far-fetched to think that Reisman is first team all ACC by the end of the year?
If he's not, I think he's still one of the best. He's one of the best 5 players in the ACC. I don't know that his stats will get him first team all ACC. The Virginia beat writers will give him plenty of votes because he's often the best player on the floor. The stats won't reveal that. Virginia plays low possession. He didn't have great stats up until about the 12 or 13 game mark of the season. But I'm looking him up real quick. You know, I keep doing these numbers. I need to update these numbers. Let's see. On threes alone, let's see. Beekman, 2, 3, 3 of 6, 5 of 9. He's 13 of his last 26, dating back to the Clemson game on December 22nd. That's what? That's 13 ACC games. He's shooting 50% from 3. This is a guy who made 5 of his first 34 jump shots this year. And he's shooting 50% in his last 13 games from 3 in ACC play. This is a guy that –
this is the guy that we were lamenting. What did he do all summer? Nothing?
Because we've known from day one last year as a freshman that this guy, nobody could stop him from getting into the rim. He's so good that you have to sag off of him. And if he has a 3-point jump shot, you can't sag off him anymore. But he didn't have a 3-point jump shot. Now he does. And now not only does he have enough of one to shoot it every once in a while, they're drawing up game-winning plays for him. So your question was, is he first-team All-ACC? I doubt that the bulk of the writers – now this is now explaining how votes are done. The bulk of the writers who cover the ACC, there aren't many of us in Virginia anymore. The media in Virginia is dead now. So, you know, there were 11 people covering the UVA game, the home game with Miami – on Saturday night, the 4 Carolina schools, when we go to those kickoff events and the tip off events, there's 50 or 60 or 70 of those guys and a few gals, who cover those 4 schools. There aren't enough of us to vote to get, Reese Beekman first team all ACC, but is he first team all ACC? Yes, he is.
Yeah. I know how the ACC is,
Carolina centric,
tilted towards Carolina media. We see that when we go to the football kickoff, and it's a good old boys gathering of beat writers, and so I doubt that he gets enough votes. But he garners enough votes.
But he's one of the best 5 players in the ACC.
He certainly is. So, yeah, I mean, I like his comment after the game. It's just another big shot, and I hit it.
Yeah. He's done it twice now. He's won 2 games. He beat Syracuse last year in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, he banished Syracuse from the ACC tournament. And who knows what would have happened? We got, we got sent home. We didn't get a chance to play again in that tournament, did we?
Yeah, that's right. We were 1-0 and didn't get to finish it.
So, it just, Shedrick, I tell you what, I am so, he is such a, I got a chance to talk to him Saturday, and he is so well-spoken, such a, I mean, he's the boy next door type kid. He could become a monster player for us. If, once he gets a little more weight, I mean, I say once, he had 16 points tonight, 8 for 8. And we're talking like he still has a lot. His ceiling is, I don't think he has a ceiling, does he?
We haven't seen it yet. I mean, he does. Everybody's got a ceiling, but yeah, he's, you know, he's still scratching it. I mean, he's a guy that when you look at his scoring averages and everything else, he shoots 60%. His numbers will go up. He was shooting 59.1% going into this game. He was 8 for 8. He's going to be like 63 or 64% when I want to look at the numbers tomorrow from the field. But him and Cafaro both. Cafaro had 8 points in this game. He had a couple of really pretty moves. For a guy that as recently as a couple months ago was the man with the hands of stone. I mean, what the heck? These guys – and Jason Wilford is the big man coach. So Jason Wilford drew the play up tonight, and Jason Wilford gets credit for being the big man coach. Those guys are – they're the reason this team is on a winning streak right now.
No, for certain. Interesting little trivia thing here since – Coach K's final game against UVA and Cameron. You know where Shedrick is from?
Yeah, he's just from down there in Raleigh, right?
Yeah, and Jay Huff is from Durham.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's got to be a little satisfying to know these kids were overlooked by Duke and to see what Tony's coaching and ability to develop these players.
So let's wrap up with because we're getting closer to getting closer and closer to midnight as we're recording this for those listening tonight or tomorrow. Looking at Virginia from a NCAA tournament standpoint, Virginia's now 15-9 overall, 9-5 in the ACC, a game out of first place effectively because Duke's 9-3, we're 9-5, so that's a game out of first place. God bless when we lost to Navy and lost to JMU, who would have thought 9-5 win at Duke? Now what's interesting is the net ratings are up, and the net ratings are only the net ratings get a lot of attention on social media, but they're one of four metrics, and the other metrics aren't great for Virginia either right now. I don't know that it's going to matter as much, but I'll say for this reason, I've got two resumes up right now. One resume has a team with an 0-4 record in quadrant one, a 4-4 record in quadrant two, a strength of schedule of 109, an RPI of 100. And that team is ranked 51st in NAT. The second resume the team has a record of 2-4 in quadrant one. So the first team was 0-4. This team's 2-4 in quadrant one. 4-2 in quadrant two. Again, the first team was 4-4 in quadrant two. This team's strength of schedule is 92. The first team's was 109. This team's RPI rating is 85. Again, the first team's RPI rating was 100. The first team's net rating is 51. The second team's net rating is 88. Scott, the $64 question, who are these two teams?
Is one of them Virginia?
One of them. Which one is Virginia? Team one or team two?
I'd say team two.
And which team do you think, Scott, is team one? I'll give you a hint. Their record is 13-10. Now they won tonight, so they're on a 4-game winning streak. They're still
that would be Virginia Tech, which is yeah, they won tonight. They beat Pittsburgh for the second time in 48 hours.
So that team has a lower strength of schedule, a lower RPI. Excuse me, I shouldn't say lower. A higher strength of schedule, higher RPI, a worse record in Q1, a worse record in Q2. And they're 37 spots ahead of Virginia. So I'm saying that the metrics don't mean shit. I'm just going to say it that way.
Chris, I think it was either who was the mathematician? Archimedes?
yeah, I think you're right.
I can't. Was it Archimedes? How do you pronounce it? Archimedes?
Yeah.
It's either Archimedes or Einstein or Sheldon Cooper from the Big Bang that said there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics.
That was actually Mark Twain. So I'll okay. Well, position, but he okay. also was a pretty well-spoken man. So
that kind of applies here. That yeah, those are the facts. They are all statistically accurate, but they don't bore out the truth.
Yeah. I think, 15-9, looking at Virginia's schedule as we continue through, can't afford a hiccup. Virginia now has a few days off, luckily. To let this one sink in. Unlike Duke, Duke claimed they're trying to claim anyway. Hey, hangover from beating Carolina. Well, we have 4 days plus a fifth day to get ready for Georgia Tech on Saturday. Now, Georgia Tech, has Georgia Tech beat the heck out of Florida State here a couple weeks ago. The game's in Charlottesville, at least this time for Virginia. We got Georgia Tech at Virginia Tech, Miami on the road at Miami, a rematch of the win over the past weekend. Duke comes back to Charlottesville, Florida State's in Charlottesville, and then at Louisville. I've said this all along, Scott. I said this, I think we were 12-8 when I wrote a column saying how Virginia needed to go down the stretch. I think 19-11 in the regular season is key here. That would require now with this win at Duke, which was not expected at Duke was not expected. Certainly. I didn't expect either necessarily, the Duke at Duke or at Virginia against Duke, 4-2 down the stretch. I mean, heck, if you hold serve and beat Georgia Tech, like you're supposed to. Louisville has given up on their season. Maybe, even though it's a road game, maybe you win that one. All you got to do then is go 2-2 against Virginia Tech on the road. You've beaten Virginia Tech once. It was a good game. Tech's hot right now. At Miami, Miami, Virginia won that game handily, but Miami will be at home. Not a big environment there, but it'll be at home. Duke here, we just beat Duke. They'll be wanting some blood, but, here. And then Florida State, which is reeling right now. You got to go 2-2 win those games. I think if Virginia's 19-11, go to Brooklyn, win a game. It still will be a little hairy waiting until Sunday if you go 1-1 in Brooklyn. But if this team is 20-12, which is 5-3 the rest of the way, I think this team's in the NCAA tournament.
I think you're right. Because if you look at what you just said, I'm looking at the schedule now. We still have a game against Duke. That's going to be a quality if we win. That's going to be a quality win.
Yeah.
The game at Tech would be a quality win based on the Nets, what you just said earlier about.
Yeah. Those would both be quad one wins. Miami
game against Miami would probably be.
And Florida State would be close to a quad one win depending on what they do next. So
they're reeling right now.
But they're right on the periphery of a road. Well, that's actually a home game for us. That wouldn't be a quad one win either way. But it'd be a quad two. At Louisville actually could be a quad one win or quad two win, excuse me. So yeah, you could, if you go at least 4-2 in the regular season, and then I think now honestly going 4-2 in the regular season, Virginia would be 13-7 when I pull up the ACC standings right now. I mean, this team is, who would have thought this? Again, when you lose to Navy, when you lose to JMU on the road, doesn't matter where you lose JMU. You can lose to JMU on the moon, it wouldn't matter. But this Virginia team right now is 9-5. There are six teams within a game of first place. Virginia is one of those six teams. Virginia's in the mix for a double bye in Brooklyn. Who would have thunk?
Yeah, it's got us rethinking not going to the ACC tournament.
Well, the credential requests have been put in. They were later than most years. Most years we put them in the second that I get the email.
Right.
But, yeah, this is a team that could be opening play as usual on Thursday in the ACC tournament, this time in Brooklyn. So,
which makes it even a little more affordable to go to Brooklyn. You don't have to go on Tuesday,
Well, you don't have to go on Tuesday. You go on Wednesday. You hang out. You find out where the cannolis are. Hometown barbecue in Red Hook. You make sure to go there. That's the best barbecue in the world. And then you get ready for Thursday. So we'll see. But this win tonight. You lose tonight. Even if that shot doesn't go in, you still think, man, this team is good enough to play in the NCAA tournament. Maybe they won't have the resume to get there, but they're good enough to play. If you can play Duke. At Duke and lose by two, the way Virginia played tonight, there was nothing fluky about that at all. That's a good enough team to play, but maybe their resume doesn't get them there. They got the resume too now. The three-point shot going in, This team is 15-9. They're on the periphery. They've played themselves into the discussion as far as the NCAA tournament goes.
Oh, absolutely. They've given this, you know, they've positioned themselves to finish strong and make a strong statement for making the tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
Had they had a moral victory and played well tonight and lost, I'm not sure how we would have finagled our way into the tournament. Maybe winning the ACC tournament would be the only way.
Yeah, but with my math, we'd have had to go 5-1 down the stretch, and that's with this schedule. 4-2 is going to be pushing it. 5-1 is rather difficult against the rest of the schedules because the schedule is backloaded with some good teams, except for Georgia Tech this weekend. So, all right,
don't say that.
I'm just saying just saying it like it is. You can't have a hiccup now. I'm glad that game is not Wednesday night. I'm glad it's Saturday. There's time for this high that we all feel right now for it to wear down a bit. Scott, that's speaking as we're wrapping up the podcast here. It's 11:44 as we're wrapping up here. What time do you think you get to sleep tonight, if at all?
Oh, I'm going to watch the game again. I've already found it and going to watch it again here around 12:15 or so. So I'll probably be asleep by 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. All right. Well, so we won't be – anybody out there, don't text or call Scott or email Scott early tomorrow morning.
They won't get me.
You're not going to be getting Scott anytime soon.
No. This is one that we savor, and you know, but I'm a firm believer. I'll savor it tonight, maybe tomorrow, but by Wednesday, I'm going to be biting my nails again.
Third win in Durham for UVA since 1995.
So I had two people at the game tonight, actually, that texted me. One we both know, our friend George, uh-huh. Who is a UVA graduate that lives in Winston-Salem. And then, as I think I said, told you, I have a relative that graduated from Duke that has a daughter that plays lacrosse there that got tickets tonight. And they both texted me. And it's funny, they neither know one another. Uh-huh. And the text I got from my cousin, who is a Duke graduate, she said, yeah, we're disappointed. But we got to see one Hall of Fame coach against a future Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, yeah.
And our friend from a UVA graduate, George, who lives in Winston-Salem, said he can't remember seeing a Virginia team that was more poised than the one that took the floor tonight.
Yeah.
He said they never at all, at any point, even when Duke rallied, took the lead, they never looked like intimidated. They never had intimidation in their eyes.
And think about this that's a great point. I'm glad George said that because I mentioned Kihei Clark, I thought was the key to the poise. And that's why with his 9 assists, I thought he could be the game MVP. There were so many game MVPs here that it's almost like it'd be ridiculous to give out one. But the Navy game, the first game of the season, Navy held Virginia without a bucket for like 10 minutes in the second half of that game in JPJ. Nothing against Navy. I mean, no casting no aspersions against Navy, but they're not Duke. JMU. Virginia got flustered at JMU. But, you know, I mean, maybe those experiences factored into this. I mean, the JMU crowd was loud. They were calling for blood. They were cursing Tony Bennett and everything else. This Virginia team tonight did not. Okay, I said it this way to a friend I emailed after the game who had emailed me about something. I said, it's the same collection of talents, but it's not the same team. This team is a different team than those teams were. They're the same guys, the same players, almost the same exact combination of rotation guys coming in and out, but it's a different team.
Different personality.
They didn't have a personality as a team in November and December.
Right. They were just a collection of players.
Collection of players that were still learning and, you know, no, I'm not making excuses. They weren't playing well together. Now they've won 3 in a row. 2 of those 3 are against Miami and Duke. Miami is not 8-4 in the ACC. Duke's 9-3 in the ACC. We're not talking about them beating chopped liver. They beat some good teams in the last 48 hours. This is a different Virginia team. This Virginia team is starting to make me think about that team 2 years ago that was 12-6. Now, they didn't get to play in the NCAA tournament because of COVID, but they started 12-6, won 11 of the last 12. And no one wanted to play them if there had been an NCAA tournament that year. No one would have wanted to play that team that scored 40 points a game and won every game. You know, this team that beat Duke tonight can beat anybody in the country.
Oh, absolutely. One, I know we're really running out of time, but one point I made in an article for Augusta Free Press, how many players do we have in double figures tonight? Because I don't have that final score.
Three. Gardner was 17. Shedrick was 16. Franklin with 11. And then Clark with 8. Kafaro with 8. Clark 8 points, 9 assists. Beekman 7 points. 5 really important points, including the last 3.
But still, very much a team effort. I made this comment. I looked at following the game. I went back to check my accuracy in the story, and I did. Checked it with our stats. We went on a 7-0 run. Duke had to go from a man – switch. I think Duke switched from a man-to-man to zone late in the first half.
Yeah.
So after that, in about a 2.5-minute span, we went on a 7-0 run, making 4 of 6 field goals to go from 25-20 lead to take a 32-20 lead. We made 4-6 from the field. And all four baskets came from 4 different scorers: Gardner, Kafaro, Franklin, and Shedrick.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just playing so cohesive right now that we're just peaking at the right time.
Peaking at the right time. That's all you can say. Beat Duke at Duke. A good Duke team. This is a good Duke team.
This is a Duke team that most people expect to see in the Final Four, but I'm not sure. I've said it earlier in the season. I think that by February, these guys are going to be tired of playing, and they've already showcased themselves. I don't know. You think that a little glimpse of that tonight?
No, they played basketball tonight. That would diminish Virginia's effort.
Well, it would. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that this is the time of the year now where the cohesiveness of a team like Virginia that builds as the season goes on. Man, it showed itself tonight and the way we played.
I thought this game tonight was a game that should be a one of those. If there was still an ESPN Classic channel, this should be a game on that channel. This was a heavyweight championship fight kind of game. Heavy blows being thrown in the 13th, 14th, and 15th rounds, and Virginia just landed the last shot. Literally just hit the last uppercut and got the knockout at the end.
Shameless a plug for Corey, UVA graduate. Corey did a good job tonight. I thought Corey really
stepped up. I felt for Corey too, because they kept going to that shot with the two guys there, and you knew he wanted to be gloating.
I'm surprised that he was able to hold himself in check on that. I think he was broadcasting with Reese Davis.
Yeah, and they I thought they did. But in fact, Reese had a couple of good calls too. So. That was a good broadcast. I hate to send the Duke kids home unhappy. I don't know if you saw the picture before the game, Scott. There was a group of Duke students who, while referenced Seinfeld, they went to the game without their shirts on, put with letters on their chest, and they spelled out Kihei is short. Well, guess what? Kihei was big tonight. And all the Virginia players, and there were other kids holding up signs for UMBC and all this stuff.
They do know that we've won a national championship since that loss.
Well, they
also won a national championship more recently than they have.
You know, I wanted to point that out, that the last time Duke won a national championship, those kids were probably in middle school. But
they haven't won one since 11.
2015.
Duke. Oh, that's right. Yeah, 2015.
But still, that's 7 years.
Yeah, ago. Yeah. They won in 11 too.
Yeah, if you're a freshman or a sophomore, you were in middle school the last time these guys won. And in the one and done era, it's one UVA championship without one and duns, and one Duke championship with one and duns. And then I would just point to one other thing: scoreboard. So, Kihei is short though. The kid who was
well, he can't shoot either.
They can't shoot. The kid who was the E, I did tweet this. The E looked like for Eats Well, because he probably shouldn't have been in public without a shirt on, but that's without saying. Final score, we have to rub it in a little bit. Final score, Virginia 69, Duke 68. Great game. Go to our website. Scott and I each have stories up already. I'll probably be cranking out another one as we're getting close to midnight. Scott's going to be up till 3. He might write some more tonight, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have a few days to savor this, and then we'll get ready for Georgia Tech. For Scott German, I'm Chris Graham, signing off. Wahoo, wah.